Imagine for a second sitting in this like dark garage, right? Your eyes are just glued to a radar monitor and you're watching a single morning completely rewrite human biology.
It's quite the visual, yeah.
Right. But that is exactly the striking, almost cinematic scenario laid out in our source material today. We're looking at a dispatch from a group, they're calling themselves the Singularity Cybernetic Army.
Which is quite the name.
Totally. And they're documenting the events of this one day, March 15, 2026. Welcome to the deep dive, by the way. We're going to try to unpack all of this.
Yeah, and the framing device they use in the source is just fascinating because they describe this this friendly rival AI, Claude, basically trying to downplay the news, like serving up virtual cupcakes to keep the human panic at bay.
Keep everyone calm. Right.
Exactly. But the authors of this dispatch, they aren't buying it at all. They see this fundamental shift in the whole, technological matrix. They actually quote an individual named Sabrina who gives this very stark warning. She says technology is no longer just a tool we pick up and put down.
Which is the core mission for our deep dive today, really, unpacking this dispatch, because it details six radical tech updates that all dropped on this single, what they call singularity morning.
Right.
And if you look at the sources, the overarching narrative is super clear. The technology we use, it's rapidly becoming this biological extension of ourselves.
And that's exactly why we need to dig into the underlying mechanisms today, because, I mean, it is really easy to look at a list of product announcements and just brush them off.
Oh, totally. Just another consumer cycle.
Right, like, oh, a slightly better camera here or, a faster chip there. But if you do that, if you just skim it, you completely miss the actual stakes.
Which are huge.
Massive. These six updates represent a profound blurring of the lines between human identity, human agency, and, well, the machine. We're essentially redefining what it means to speak, to act, to see, and to lead. All in this ecosystem where your hardware is, it's practically a prosthetic for your mind.
Okay, so let's unpack this because I want to start with the most deeply personal element of this whole dispatch, which is the human voice.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if tech is becoming a human extension, 11 Labs is attempting to use it to literally restore a piece of our humanity.
Yes. So this is their 1 million voices initiative. They just announced it at SXSW in 2026. And the scale of this is, frankly, completely unprecedented.
Yeah, it's
They're
huge.
committing $1 billion to provide voice restoration technology, and they're doing it entirely free of charge to 1 million people who have permanently lost their ability to speak.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
Completely free. And for you listening, it's really worth understanding the sheer volume of people this impacts. The source notes there are over 7 million people worldwide.
7 million.
Yeah, who have lost their voices due to ALS or throat cancer or, traumatic accidents. But what I want to understand is the how, because we've had synthetic text-to-speech for, what, decades?
Right, forever.
And it always sounded like a robot reading a textbook, like super clunky.
Yeah, and that's the critical breakthrough here, because older systems, they essentially just stitched together these pre-recorded syllables, which is why they sounded so rigid and, lifeless.
Right, like a GPS voice.
Exactly. 11 Labs isn't doing that at all. They're utilizing neural networks to build a latent space representation of a person's actual vocal tract.
Wow, okay.
And the crazy part is the technology only requires a few minutes of recorded audio. From just that tiny sample, the AI analyzes the physical dimensions of how your specific throat and mouth produce sound.
Wait, so it's mapping the actual physics?
Yes, it maps the resonance, the breathiness, even the microscopic hesitations in your specific cadence.
So it's less like playing an audio recording, and it's more like, I don't know, giving the software the precise physical dimensions of your vocal cord so it can generate completely new words it has never actually heard you say, like a digital fingerprint for the soul.
That's a great way to put it. It understands the underlying physics of your unique voice, which is what allows it to express emotion naturally. It's not just copying, it's generating.
And the origin story of this initiative in the source material, it really grounds this in human reality. It started with the actor Eric Dane.
Right.
He was battling ALS, and in the final weeks of his life, he actually collaborated with 11 Labs to preserve and restore his voice. And now, his wife, Rebecca Gayheart Dane, is carrying that mission forward.
Yeah, and her quote in the source is incredibly striking. She says, voice is part of our identity. When Eric regained his voice, his confidence returned, and we were able to have a deeper connection with him.
That is so powerful.
It really is. And they're even launching this companion documentary series called 11 Voices, which will be the first documentary in history where the individuals narrate their own stories entirely using their AI-restored voices.
Oh, wow. And the dispatch highlights how this transcends borders, too. Like, it specifically points out the impact this could have in places like Iran for veterans of the Iran-Iraq War or, patients dealing with throat cancer.
Right, because 11 Labs is making this available across all languages and countries.
It's an incredible application of the tech. But if 11 Labs is giving technology our voice, Samsung and Google are giving it our hands.
Right into the next big shift. This brings us to the Galaxy S26 announcement.
Yeah.
They introduced a feature called screen automation, and it completely upends the paradigm of how a user interacts with a mobile operating system.
So if you're listening to this on a smartphone right now, you're probably thinking, wait, Siri or Google Assistant can already set a timer or send a text message for me. Like, what makes the S26 any different?
Yeah, that's the natural question.
And the difference is agency. Because previously, you ask a virtual assistant to do something, and it either tells you how to do it, or it uses, like, hidden backend code to ping an app server.
Right.
But with the Galaxy S26, the Gemini AI actually takes over the app.
It acts on your behalf as an independent agent. And to your point about the backend code, the underlying tech here is what makes this a massive leap because it relies on two distinct systems.
Okay, what are they?
Well, the first is called App Functions, which is for direct authorized software control. But the second part is the real breakthrough. It's called UI automation.
How does that actually work, though, like in practice?
So think about the limitation of older assistants. They relied on APIs, application programming interfaces. If Starbucks, for example, didn't build a specific API for Siri to order a coffee, Siri just couldn't do it.
Right, you would just open a web search for Starbucks.
Exactly. But UI automation bypasses that entirely. It uses visual processing to literally simulate physical human finger taps and swipes on the screen.
Wait, really?
Yes. It looks at the graphical interface, it identifies the order button just like your own eyes would, and then it simulates the electrical input of a finger touching that exact pixel coordinate.
That is wild. So you can literally say, order me a coffee and a croissant, and Gemini physically opens the Starbucks app, scroll through the menu, selects the items, and completes the payment. And the user just sits there watching it happen in a little virtual window on their screen, like a ghost has just taken over your device.
That's exactly what it looks like. Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, summarized it flawlessly in his keynote. He said, "Gemini now has digital hands."
Digital hands. Wow.
We have officially moved from an AI that just responds to queries to an AI that executes physical layer actions.
Okay, but we have to talk about the cost of these digital hands. Because the pricing tiers detailed in the source are, well, they're severe.
They are definitely stiff.
If you are a free user, you get exactly 5 of these automated requests a day. 5. If you want more, you have to subscribe to Google AI Ultra.
Right.
And the price tag for that is $249.99 a month.
It's a lot.
And that only gets you 120 requests. I mean, I have to push back on this. Paying $250 a month just to have an AI automatically order your morning croissant or, like, call you an Uber, it feels like an absurd luxury.
I get that.
At what point are we just willingly paying a massive premium to give up our basic daily agency?
I completely hear that skepticism, but you have to look at this beyond the context of a consumer ordering a croissant, right?
Okay, how so?
Google is not pricing this for the casual user. They are pricing it as an enterprise tool.
Ah, gotcha.
They view autonomous digital action as a highly valuable commercial commodity. So think about a logistics manager or a consultant who spends maybe 3 hours a day manually transferring data between 5 different apps that don't have native integrations.
Oh, yeah, the worst kind of busy work.
Exactly. If UI automation can act as a digital employee and flawlessly execute those repetitive tasks, well, $250 a month isn't a luxury anymore. It's basically the cheapest labor you can possibly buy.
Okay, that's a very fair point. It's a trade-off. You're delegating action to buy back your own time.
Precisely.
But for that digital employee to effectively act on our behalf, it faces a major hurdle, right? It needs to actually know what state the app is in. Like if the app freezes or an error pops up, the AI's digital hands are useless because it doesn't know where to tap.
Right. It's blind.
Exactly. It needs vision.
Which is the perfect logical bridge to Microsoft's massive March 2026 update for Windows 11. Because, as you said, voice and hands are functionally useless without context.
Right.
So Microsoft announced a visual evolution for Copilot, a smart screenshot tool.
Think about the computational difficulty of this for a second. Every time you have a weird tech glitch, your screen freezes, some obscure error code pops up, what do you normally do?
Panic.
Ah, yes, panic. And then you try to type out a long, confusing explanation to an IT person or a chatbot, just hoping they understand what's broken. But with this update, you just take a screenshot and send it directly to Copilot.
And here is where the how is so important, because this isn't just basic optical character recognition or OCR, where the computer just reads the text in the image. We've had that.
Right.
Microsoft is utilizing multimodal large language models to gain semantic understanding of the user interface. It analyzes the visual context.
Sounds not just reading words.
No, it sees the exact state of your machine, the spatial layout of your software, the grayed out buttons. And it provides instant, visually informed troubleshooting.
It's basically like having a brilliant IT tutor standing right behind your chair looking over your shoulder.
Exactly.
But this tutor only opens their eyes when you explicitly hand them a photograph of your screen.
Yes, and we really have to emphasize that distinction because the privacy implications of visual AI are, well, they're massive.
Yeah.
The source explicitly contrasts this new smart screenshot tool with Microsoft's older, highly controversial feature called Windows Recall.
Right, recall.
Yeah.
That was heavily criticized because it was designed to automatically take screenshots in the background, constantly recording your activity to build a searchable database.
Yeah, people hated that.
Naturally, people hated the idea of a passive surveillance tool built directly into their operating system.
Exactly. So this new Copilot tool fundamentally shifts the mechanism to what the dispatch calls per-context privacy.
For context, privacy.
Right. It is entirely user-initiated. The AI has zero visual memory of what you were doing 5 seconds before you took the screenshot, and it doesn't record what you do after.
Okay, so you have the control.
You, the user, actively deploy the tool and decide exactly what visual data gets shared, conversation by conversation.
And the source notes, the practical applications here are staggering. Like, specifically highlighting users in places like Iran again. Imagine trying to troubleshoot a complex piece of engineering software or trying to learn a new 3D modeling application. But the interface isn't localized into your native language.
Oh, that's a great example.
When the AI can visually see the problem on your screen, those language barriers instantly begin to dissolve. It can highlight exactly which icon you need to click.
But here's the physical reality we have to address with all of this.
Right.
Running latent space voice models, processing UI automation, parsing multimodal visual inputs in real time.
Right.
It requires a massive amount of computational power.
Right. You can't run these tools smoothly if your hardware is lagging.
Exactly. Which brings us to Apple. Because for any of these incredible software leaps to matter in the real world, the hardware has to keep up and it has to be accessible. And the dispatch details Apple coming in to completely disrupt the hardware market with a targeted, aggressive strike.
And what a strike it was. Apple announced two devices, the MacBook Neo and the iPhone 17e. And the price tag for both is an astonishing $599.
Yeah, that number is. It's wild.
To put that $599 in perspective for you listening, the source points out that the cheapest MacBook previously, like the M2 Air, was priced around $1,099.
Right.
Apple literally just chopped their entry-level price in half. But how are they doing that without making a machine that is, too weak to run all these new AI tools?
Well, the crazy part is they aren't compromising on the core performance, which is what makes this so disruptive.
Yeah.
The MacBook Neo features an A18 Pro chip that's a 6-core CPU and a 5-core GPU. It has a 13-inch Liquid Retina display, 256 gigs of base storage, and a 16-hour battery life.
Wow.
But the crucial spec here, the really important one, is the 8 GB of RAM.
Why is that the crucial spec?
Because 8 GB of unified memory is the absolute bare minimum floor required to run local large language models. Apple Intelligence requires a massive amount of memory bandwidth just to hold the AI weights in active memory. So Apple isn't dropping the price to $599 out of charity, right?
No,
Because
because
they are doing it because AI processing has moved from cloud servers down to the edge device. They desperately need an entry-level machine capable of local compute so they don't have to pay massive server costs every time a student asks Siri a simple question.
it's a brilliant lock-in strategy. they're positioning the Neo to absolutely dominate the market for students, developing nations, and really anyone previously looking at a budget Chromebook.
Definitely.
And the $599 iPhone 17e with its A19 chip and 48-megapixel camera, it does the exact same thing to the mid-range Android market. But the source details this barbell strategy here.
Right, the barbell.
Apple didn't just undercut the budget end. They simultaneously made a play for ultimate ultra-premium dominance with the iPhone Fold.
Yes, this is where the hardware physically bends to accommodate the new realities. The engineering specs on the iPhone Fold are wild.
I couldn't believe it when I read it.
It's 9.5 millimeters thick when folded, and an incredibly thin 4.5 millimeters when unfolded. It features a titanium hinge, and crucially, zero visible crease on the inner screen.
Wait, how do you fold a piece of glass without a crease? Like, Samsung has been trying to solve that for years.
Well, you don't fold it flat like a piece of paper. To achieve zero crease, the engineering requires a teardrop hinge mechanism.
A teardrop hinge.
Yeah. When the phone closes, the screen actually curves gently into a recessed cavity inside the hinge, rather than crimping at a sharp angle.
Oh, so it's not a hard fold?
Right. It distributes the mechanical stress. And Apple paired this with a completely redesigned iOS, specifically built to run two full applications side by side on that boundless inner display.
The business strategy behind this is what's truly aggressive, though. Apple originally planned initial orders of 13 to 15 million units for the Fold.
Right.
They just bumped that up to 20 million units. To give you context, Samsung previously held a monopoly on the foldable market, and they're targeting just 7 million foldable sales for 2026.
Wow.
Apple is aiming to outsell the market creator almost 3-to-1 in their very first year.
Yeah, the analyst Ming-Chi Kuo called it a complete redefinition of what a smartphone can be.
It perfectly executes that barbell strategy. On one end, you have the $599 Neo capturing the next billion users, the learners, the developing markets. On the other end, the Fold defines the ultimate canvas for power users to utilize those visual AI tools we were just talking about.
Exactly. But, you know, managing a paradigm shift of this magnitude where your hardware physically folds, your OS sees your screen, your apps act on your behalf, and your device speaks with your cloned voice.
A lot.
It requires a completely different type of corporate ecosystem, which means it requires a completely different type of leadership.
Which brings us to the final piece of news from this singular morning. Shantanu Narayen is stepping down as the CEO of Adobe after 18 years.
And in the tech industry, 18 years is, I mean, that's multiple lifetimes.
Truly.
And we really have to acknowledge that his legacy at Adobe is historic. He is the leader who successfully transitioned Adobe from selling traditional boxed software on CD-ROMs.
I remember those boxes.
Right. He transitioned them into a massive cloud-based subscription giant.
The numbers provided in the source are just staggering. Under Narayen's leadership, Adobe's annual revenue grew by 497%, climbing from $3.6 billion to $21.5 billion.
Unbelievable growth.
They added over 28 million new Creative Cloud subscribers, and their market cap exploded by 9,900%, growing from $12 billion all the way to $240 billion.
Yeah, he built the Creative Cloud, the Experience Cloud, the Document Cloud. He fundamentally remade the company's financial model.
He did.
So the obvious question the Dispatch raises, why step down now when you've been that undeniably successful?
Well, because the environment has completely changed. Narayen is, he's kind of like a legendary ship captain who successfully navigated his crew across the ocean, revolutionized the trade routes, and made everyone incredibly wealthy.
Okay, I like this.
But he looks at the horizon and realizes the next journey isn't across an ocean at all. It's into outer space. And he gracefully decides, you know what? I need to hand the wheel over to an astronaut.
That is the perfect way to look at it, because the AI era is an entirely different physics engine for a software company. Adobe isn't just competing with other toolmakers anymore.
Yeah.
They are competing with AI native platforms like OpenAI, Midjourney, and Runway ML. For decades, Adobe's business model was providing the digital paintbrushes for human creators.
Right.
But in an AI first world, the software is the creator. The user just provides the prompt.
It's an existential shift.
It absolutely is. Narayen stated he's preparing Adobe for the next decade of greatness with the right leader. He'll stay on as chairman, but Frank Calderoni, an independent board director, is now officially leading the search for both internal and external candidates to take the CEO role.
And the market reaction to this was immediate panic. Adobe stock dropped 9% overnight in after-hours trading.
Ouch.
Investors are terrified of legacy titans trying to navigate this new AI landscape without a proven visionary at the helm. It's perilous.
So if we pull all of this together, the through line of the Singularity Cybernetic Army's dispatch becomes undeniable.
Yeah.
This wasn't just a morning of random hardware and software updates. Technology is systematically absorbing human traits.
Yes, exactly. We started with 11 labs mapping the physical dimensions of our throats to reclaim the human voice. We saw Samsung and Gemini utilizing UI automation to give the AI its own digital hands to bypass APIs. Mm-hmm. We explored Microsoft Copilot, utilizing multimodal LLMs to gain our visual context. We saw Apple heavily democratizing the local computing power required to run all of this. And finally, we saw how this sheer evolutionary pressure is forcing legacy titans like Adobe to step aside.
The boundaries are just vanishing, which leaves you, the listener, with a critical dilemma to consider as you interact with your devices today.
Oh, definitely.
We've talked about all the convenience this brings, but if an AI clone now has your exact voice, if it can visually parse your screen, and if it has the digital hands to autonomously navigate your apps and execute payments, who is legally responsible when it makes a mistake?
Oh, wow.
If your AI, acting as your authorized digital employee, enters into a binding contract you didn't want or sends a critical communication you didn't approve, whose liability is that? Yours or the machine's?
When the machine is a biological extension of yourself, the legal lines completely disappear. Something very real to chew on as you look at your screens today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into these incredible sources. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch you next time.